Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servodidio, and I'm your host. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Again, everyone, you can find Insight into Healing on Facebook at www.facebook.com/insightintohealing. And you can also send me an email at insightintohealing@gmail.com for any questions and show topics, and also to find out about upcoming guests. Also, the very exciting news, my first book has come out, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos, and also at my publisher page at www.ccbpublishing.com/aservodidio.html. Well, let's get to our guest tonight. On the line, I have comedian, motivational speaker, Jerry Caruso. Ever hear the one about a stand-up comedian turned motivational speaker? Let me introduce you to this individual. His name is Jerry Caruso. He loves to take the time to make people laugh. This all began back at the age of 12 when Jerry began to entertain classmates at the St. Patrick's Elementary School schoolyard. Jerry says, "God has blessed me with this special talent, and I use this gift in many ways." Jerry is a stand-up comedian, celebrity impressionist, songwriter, and an actor for Murder Mystery USA, an instructor of stand-up comedy at the community college level, a cable TV show talk host, and a motivational speaker on Laughter is the Best Medicine. Jerry, welcome to Insight into Healing.
Thank you for having me, Alexa. How are you?
Very good, very good. I've been so excited to have you on tonight. I just love your career path as stand-up comedian and motivational speaker. So let's get started. Which one came first, the comedian or the motivational speaker?
The comedian came first, even though I always speak to people about anything and everything. But, the comedian came first. It started like you gave with that nice intro back when I was a kid in the schoolyard. I had the same classmates. And I graduated into high school. And then it took time off here and there. But I always made sure every day I tried to make people laugh for any reason. I'd look for any opportunity. And then as I got into comedy, way into the 90s, like 93, I just started to try to do things like benefits or via comedy shows and making fundraisers, making money for different causes and cancer teams like Relay for Life or even different support groups and stuff. So I just started to think about, why can't I talk to support groups? I mean, it took a while to think about that, but that was in the early 2000s. Ever since I did that, people say, "You're not a public speaker. You're a motivational speaker." I go, "Why?" I go, "What's the difference?" They go, "Well, you motivate people to laugh, and you talk about how laughter heals and how laughter helps, and you're making them laugh at the same time. So what's wrong with that?" I go, "Oh, yeah, that's a good point." So I figured, why not? And ever since then, I've been doing as much as I possibly can in lines of speaking about laughter is the best.
Yes, yes. Do you find sometimes when you're doing these different fundraisers, sometimes it's kind of hard to start with the laughter, even though it is such a tough topic as cancer or the heroin epidemic? Do you find sometimes it takes a while to warm up the crowd, or do they usually, pretty easily engaged?
Well, they're easily engaged because if they kind of know ahead of time, and they usually do, that I'm coming, then what happens is that they know that they're going to laugh. Well, the other thing that happens is they're going to be funny, too. But they know that they're going to laugh. I'm going to make them laugh. But they also know I'm going to try to educate them as to what laughter does. So they're usually pretty receptive toward it. They always look at the big picture and say, like, oh, I didn't know that. And so they hear about the health benefits, and then they're saying, okay, are we going to tell a joke now? So I try to mix it in. Like, I'll throw a few facts, and then I tell a joke or two or three. And I try to keep it clean because I don't think you have to be dirty to be funny. I think, sharing your personal life experiences just, shares it with everybody, and they see the commonality in their lives. And so it goes to my advantage. So if they know that I'm a comedian, so they go, oh, you've got to tell a joke. he's got to say something funny. And then I go on with it. I may open up with a joke, you know, but they appreciate it, and then they're listening, and then they're engaging with me, whether they laugh or whether they're listening to me, you know, talk about what the what it does for your health.
Yes, and I found it so important what you're doing too, because also as an actress myself and as a therapist and doing this radio show, I've realized even the entertainment industry has been moving towards educating their listeners, their viewers, on tough subjects as domestic violence, the heroin epidemic, you know, cancer, suicide ideation, suicide attempts. So I think it's so relevant and it's so important what you're doing that it's so on target, because I find that the world really needs to be educated also, but also to laugh and have it in a setting where they feel where they're just going to be vulnerable because it's a tough topic, but also to have that safety support and the support and being able to you know feel comfortable and also laugh too and be able to find some joy and peace in it.
Oh, absolutely. I think that laughter can help to open the doors to learning things, and also opens doors to have people let their guard down and just listen to what you're talking about, and then even laughing, saying like, "Oh, this ain't gonna be so bad." That's like if I have to, like, I think the biggest fear would be, I don't know about you, but if you look at like a younger crowd, you know, because I just hit 60, and so. If I go to a younger crowd and try to do the same thing, you know, I got to win them over first, because they're looking at me like, oh, my God, this guy's as old as my parents or as old as my aunt and uncle. What are I going to listen to him for? So I have that challenge. But once I do that, yeah, and they let their guard down and then they laugh, then all of a sudden, you know, they're on your side. And then it opens the doors to, you know, educate and make them aware of the importance of it. But I also try to stress the most important thing is that you have to laugh. And you and I always talk about it. You know, you have to laugh to survive in life, because if you take things seriously, you know, it causes a lot of health issues.
Yes, yes. What do you usually, when you do the motivational speaking, what do you say about laughter? What do you find really rings true with the audience or hits home with them?
I always tell them how, you know, one of the biggest things that you know, it is so true, it helps to develop these, you know, T cells, these killer cells that go after, like, either cancer cells, and that's one of the things that I share. But I also, you know, the obvious, how it elevates your mood, and it focuses away from guilt, stress, anger, and it gives you of overall well-being, like it's a beneficial effect. So when I share those, people are nodding their heads like, oh, my God, I, you know, that is so true. And, you know, I'll always bring up examples about how people, you know, be two groups of people doing a study, and put one set of people in like a murder mystery or an adventure, and people tense up and their blood pressure is elevated. Whereas if they see a comedy or something funny or a comedian performing, how their blood pressure lowers, how they're at ease, how they're not tensed up. And so when I share those facts, they're all like, oh, my God, this is so blatantly obvious. This hit me in the face. I should have known this. But it's not that people should know that. People just take laughter for granted.
Yes. I almost find, I don't know about you, but I almost find sometimes people feel guilty to laugh with life, because there's so many things going on in the world, or if there's things going on in their family or with their loved ones, they almost feel like they don't have the permission to laugh.
That is so true. That's like when I approach, if and when I approach different organizations, for example, if they have like a bike run, or they have a relay, they have a walk, or they have a run, and they'll say, well, you know, cancer isn't a laughing matter. I go, wow. I don't go and tell jokes about cancer. I tell jokes about me. I tell jokes about my life, or I tell jokes about things that can touch the heart and that not be offensive to anyone. But some people get so uptight thinking that what you're going to do, and that's a problem being labeled as a comedian. I mean, yes, I am funny, and people pay me, and people come to see my shows, and people like me, and I love them back. But I think there's that direct fear, like if it's someone like say they're trying to raise money because a child is hurt or a child has a disease or someone in the family is fighting a disease and they need money to pay their bills. I think they just tense up and think I'm going to go into my nightclub act, even though I guarantee them that I'm going to be clean. I'm going to be, if it's family friendly, if you want younger people there, then that's fine too. And I adjusted to that. However, if it's 21 or over, then I know that I can lean one way and still not have them fear anything. Because, again, I don't want to offend anybody. I'm not trying to offend anybody in their family. That's all about benefits, because think about this, all right? How can someone heckle at a benefit? They look like idiots, because if it's a benefit for someone who's in dire need or is fighting cancer, they look like the idiots. So if they try to heckle me, it's like, you know what? I think you should back up, because you're not the popular person of the party now. People look at you like, why don't you just leave here, you know? But those are things that I face, but not as often as people would think.
Yes. And I think also for people to understand that people who are going through this, family members, if it's cancer, if it's drug addiction, if it's a childhood disease or an accident, people need to have money for certain things. The people going through it have such a serious thing that they're going through. Sometimes to just laugh about it, even if the person is there themselves. I mean, I remember when my dad has passed in May 15th was 5 years with lung cancer, and he used to laugh at certain things that were part of, you know, going to chemo and having to take the train from Long Island into the taking the LIRR into the city and back in the beginning and just do some of the jokes that would be that, you know, there'd always be those kids that would get on certain stations and lock themselves in the bathroom to avoid paying the train fare. And as anyone knows, when you are on chemo, you really need to be close to a bathroom. And he would say, you know, the poor conductor knew him by name because he'd always have to have, because the kids would lock themselves in the bathroom. And he always had a joke that the same kid, he told the kid, next time go to another bathroom, go at the other end of the train. I sit here. I got to go. And, you know, and those thoughts, you have to laugh, even though it's not a funny thing, but it's funny. You know, there was something that kept my dad to kind of make it normal, normalize what he was going through.
Well, absolutely, because they – you always, and like I know a girl, her name is Lisa, she's a sweetheart, she's fighting cancer, and she always feels bad when she, you know, has to ask for help. I go, never, ever feel bad asking for help. You know people will help you because they love you, but then she'll share about it and she makes fun of it, and that's great because you have to. And some of those people that fight that, and I lost my dad to cancer too, by the way, a long time ago, but it's like tough. It's tough stuff, but you just look at these people, and they're the most courageous and brave and heroes and heroines for what they fight. But what makes them even more strong is when you see them laugh at things and say, like, I'm going to beat this. I got stuff to do. You know, I don't have time for this thing. And that's the attitude. You say you never know how you're going to be in that position, but then you think of people saying, like, oh, they shouldn't be that way. No, they can act the way they want to be because it's something they're battling, and if their sense of humor has to be part of their armor, then God bless them. Go ahead and do it, because if it makes you feel better and gives you more positive vibes, hey, you know as well as I do, the more positive you are when you fight something, the stronger you are. Yes, a lot of it is faith-based and, you know, asking God for help. You know, God wants you to deal with it head on, and you become an example for others as well, including family members.
Yes. Yes, I really believe that's what, I mean, my dad really lasted, you know, for someone with lung cancer, much longer than expected, but he wanted to fight it. It was his will, it was his sense of humor, it was God, and it was his motivation of keep going forward. And I think that's so important. Be having that peaceful side, having that motivation and encouragement really is half the battle, I find.
Oh, definitely. And I can I ask you, how long did he last with lung cancer?
He lasted 4 years.
Wow.
Which is usually the longest. Yes. He was diagnosed and they said he would have passed within the first 3 months, and
wow,
he lasted 4 years. And he ended up dying of a heart attack. Not of lung cancer, but he was on his end stages of the hospice was in. But, yeah, they said that it was a miracle. And they said your dad was a fighter. He was hysterical.
Wow.
He was very sarcastic. He was, you know, he made everybody laugh. He was still that person. And, you know, they said that's what it was. Your dad was tough. He was funny,
wow,
but he was tough. Yeah.
That, That's amazing. Yeah, because I unfortunately I lost my father-in-law, and he fought, but we lost him in less than a year. He was 84, but he tried to keep a sense of humor, but it just got to him, and he had tried, and that's why I look at your dad. God bless him. Wow, that's quite a long haul, because you hear people with lung cancer, it's usually within a year, and that's what happened to my father-in-law. God rest his soul. So it's really that's an inspirational thing. But it teaches all of us to be tough, too, and it teaches us all to be, you're relying upon faith, but relying upon family and friends, but relying upon a positive attitude.
Yes, yes. And he was on this new medication. It's not new anymore, the Tarceva. It's the pill form of chemo, so he didn't have to actually go in and get those treatments. He took the pill, so it wasn't as harsh as going in for treatment. So, he had a lot of things. He was a pioneer, and he always said, after I'm passed, spread the word about lung cancer, spread it, spread what's going on, educate people. He was at Sloan Kettering. Dr. Chris was his top surgeon there, thoracic surgeon.
Wow.
They were amazing. Yes.
Hey, you want to have something funny? Is that
great?
When you have something funny is I make donations to that hospital because I think they do great work. I found out about them, and once I made – donations, I always get mail from them, and I see the work that they do, and I'm like, how can I not donate? It doesn't matter Boston, New York. That has nothing to do with it. I'm just going to donate because I didn't believe in them and what they do. So sorry to interrupt, but I just thought of it.
No, that's okay. Oh, we also have a comment from the chat room. Mary Kay has said her father had died of lung cancer in 2 years. So her father fought for 2 years with lung cancer.
Oh, God bless. That's like a gift. I mean, what you had was like a gift, the extension of your dad's life and the extension of this woman's dad's life as well. Because, like I said, I was unfortunate. We lost my father-in-law. I think it was within 8 months, and, we wish we had him longer. But, we also know we didn't want to see him suffer. But, he tried, and we saw that, too. And, we had some great moments together. So that's a good memory. But that's awesome. I'm happy to hear that, Hey, that's what it's all about, for us to talk about it and people to interject as to, share their experiences too, because that's what it's all about.
Yes, and I think it's bringing up the discussion. And I think it's great when you put in the comedy and the motivational speaking, because I think people, it's such an uncomfortable one of these topics are hard to talk about. So I think it's being able to be strong enough, to be brave enough, to be the one that leads the conversation is so important. And what you're doing is really God's work. It's really amazing work.
Thank you. And I also look at it this way, how I'll try to start my motivational speaking. I always tell people, what's the biggest fear in people's lives? And some say death. I go, no, it's not death. It's actually taxes. and public speaking is the biggest fear. I go, what are you kidding me? You'd rather die than public speak? I mean, come on. It's like, I think of that famous line. I know I'm not quoting a notable person, but what's that line that Woody Allen said? I don't mind death. I just don't want to be there when it happens. And I always love that line because I think it's such a true line despite his past. But he would say that, and I'd always tell people, whenever you go to a wake, think of it this way. What is the best topic of conversation about the person that passed? They want to talk about the funny times, the good times, or stuff that happened, or stuff that that person who has passed had said. So you try to think of that person in a positive note. So as sad as a funeral or a wake could be, people are always talking about, I remember about your father-in-law. I remember when he did this. I remember when he said he used to say this. And then people are laughing, and you shouldn't feel guilty about that, because to me that's the icebreaker. Yeah, there's going to be sadness, there's going to be sorrow, but if people who lost someone near and dear to them think about funny stuff about them, that's great. I'm not saying that people say, I can't wait to go to that next wake. That guy's going to be there telling jokes. No, it has nothing to do with it. It just has to do with the fact that, we all are sensitive to what happens, but we also know that if you talk about the good things about the person, and even if it involves humor, then it's going to put smiles on people's faces and say, yep, I remember him just like that.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And that's really, you know, the premise I based my book on, finding your peace within the chaos, because I found so many times working as a psychotherapist with people who are dealing with such, you know, horrific events of abuse and trauma that it's almost they don't see any hope. They don't see anything, you know, it ever really ending. And I would say, it'll one day you'll just be, yes, you're going through a lot, but one day you might just see something funny, or you might see a beautiful flower and be like, wow, that's so beautiful. Take cherish in those moments. Those are the peace within the chaos. You're allowed to really say, wow, that's really beautiful. Let me sit here and look at that. Or let me laugh a little bit. You know, I tripped over something, or it was silly, or I dropped something and it was funny. You know, you're allowed to. Those are those moments you really need when you're going through so much. The moments to remember that you can cherish of those times of laughing or finding peace or watching a new beginning grow, I think is so important for growth and healing.
Oh, absolutely. Like, that's like when my dad had passed, God rest his soul. He died in 85, and my son, Matt, had turned, just before he turned one, and my father always, I remember the pain that my dad was going through. He had brain cancer, and he would smile when he'd see my son as a baby. But then the day that we had, you know, the wake and the funeral, and then we had him buried, we come home, and we're all sad. Didn't my son take his first steps? That's God telling you that, look, everything's okay. Where there's death, there's life. And it put a smile on our face. And we were proud of my son. He hadn't been a year yet. He was like 2 months away from being a year old. He took his first steps. It's almost like my dad was channeling through him, saying, like, I know you're sad, but let me give you something to be happy about. I'm going to work with this guy named God. He's gonna help you out. And it really made a difference. And like you said, too, take the things that happen to you and laugh at that, because, you know, God's trying to tell you, you know, don't be so uptight about this. I have it now. You know, I have your dad, Alexa. I have your dad, Jerry. You know, they're in heaven. They're hanging out, and they're having fun, and they're telling jokes. And, you know, be at peace down here. I mean, you celebrated his life and continue to do so.
Yes, yes. And I think it's also, you know, spreading the message and giving it back and paying it forward. I know we were discussing that before the show, how important it is to pay it forward. And I think also probably motivates you as a comedian, a motivational speaker, and also for me in all the different careers I do, is really in what I base my life on, is giving back what I've learned and then paying it forward so other people can learn or to you know, teach it to somebody else.
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, like we said, that's such a contagious thing to pay it forward, and it's the kind of thing where once someone does it or they hear of it, then they might want to do it too, and it can be something little. It doesn't have to be something. You don't have to go out and give out $100. You don't have to do anything. Even if you're letting people, you know, go while you're in a hurry and they want to cross in front of you, that's fine, because you're doing something nice. Don't be in a hurry. You know, we're all meant to be in a hurry, but if we stop and smell the roses and do something good, go buy a cup of coffee. One time I bought a cup of coffee for a veteran. I'm not trying to tell myself by all means, but I felt like it. And he goes, all I want is a small coffee. I go, no, get a large one. He goes, no, all I want is a small one. I go, get a donut. He goes, no, I don't. I go, go get two. He goes, no, I'll take the coffee. I go, don't be angry. I'm just trying to do something nice. He goes, no, I really appreciate it. And I put a big smile on his face. And every time I saw him from that point on, he'd always say hi to me and ask me how I am and stuff. So he took the time. But because I paid it forward, that made him feel good. And that made me feel real good inside. And, you know, I didn't go telling people that I did it. And here I am telling on national radio. Okay, so I guess more than two people know now, but you know, it was just a good thing to do, and you and I talked about it. We'd love to ask everybody out there to go pay it forward. Do it tomorrow. Do it tonight if you want it, but just go do something. You know, go volunteer. Go, you know, buy somebody a cup of coffee. Hold the door open. You know, someone's having a bad day. Try to make them laugh. Say hi to them. Smile at them. You know, that thing that takes probably 3 seconds, 4 seconds, 5 seconds can make a world of difference.
Yes. Yes. I was speaking to another guest that had been on my show, Greg Loomis, who is a suicide attempt survivor, and he was telling me a story of a young man who had attempted suicide, that this man set out, you know, to jump off a bridge, and he took public transportation to get there, and he took different things, and he was crying on the bus, and he was, you know, very upset. And he said, if one person stops and asks me if what's wrong, I won't jump off the bridge. I won't. I'll stop this, and I'll go home. And now he got to the bridge. He stood up on the bridge, and there were some tourists that came up, and they tapped him on the shoulder, and he was like, wow, this is great. And they asked him to take a picture of them. And he went down, he took a picture of them, and then after they walked away, he jumped off the bridge. He survived, thank God. But it just goes to show you that you never know who's sitting next to you. I know sometimes it's scary if someone's crying or looks like something's really wrong with them, but I think it's saying, are you okay? Do you want me to call someone for you? Could save literally somebody's life.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, geez, it's like to be at that point, just to be, you know, how do I put it? Act like an angel or, you know, God throws a situation at you and you react positively and you do it. It's not only you helping that person, but you don't know what you're doing for yourself as well. Yes, it goes in magnitude for what it does for the person, for what they're suffering and what they're going through. And I always, like someone had told me once, and again, it's not me, but some woman I used to work with said, she goes, you know what I noticed about you? I go, what? Did I get you gray? She goes, no, dummy. She goes, I noticed that you're always for the underdog. You're always good to the people that never talk to anybody, that are shy, that are quiet, and you bring out the good in them. She goes, that's cool. Now, don't get mushy over me. I go, I'm not getting mushy. I go, I never knew that. She goes, yeah, you're all for the underdog. She goes, I see what you do. And I guess she had told me that one day, did I touch this woman who was verbally abused by her boss? I never knew that. She was always quiet. She goes, Jerry, she never talks to anybody. And you brighten her day. Every day she'd come up to pick up her computer reports because I work in IT. And it just touched me to know that. And ever since then, you know, she's my friend on Facebook. I always ask her how she's doing every once in a while. But knowing that I did that, you know, almost brings me to tears just to think that oh, my God, you know, I didn't know she was verbally abused, but, you know, it could have been even further than her boss. But I didn't know if this woman was going to tell me any more about it. But, again, it's like you said, you never know.
No, you never know. And I think it's also, we always hear on the media the negative impact we have on people and the negative things. But I think really everyone needs to know how important they are. Everything they do has an impact. The positive, small positive thing that they do really has an impact. Even if they don't see any evidence of it, everybody matters and everybody really makes an impact. I think people need to know that, you know, especially if you're suffering from depression or trauma or abuse or anything, you make an impact. You have a right. And I think knowing that you're important, I think, and by doing, you know, comedy and motivational speaking and doing those type of things, you're involving people and speaking to them, I think, you know, when they're most vulnerable too, but also giving them a support network and a team, which I find people really need to have a team and be around other people who are healthy and positive.
Oh, God, yeah, and that's what they need. Like, one of my greatest gifts that God gave to me is when I was unemployed, I started talking, like doing motivational speaking to it's called the Brain Injury Support Groups of Mass. They're called BIAMA, and I spoke within a few years' time, while I was unemployed, I spoke to like 16 groups, different groups from different towns. The biggest gift that I got, and it's not about the money, but I got paid very well to teach brain injured patients or brain injured people how to do stand-up comedy, and they actually paid me for it.
Wow.
They said, oh, we'll pay you for it if you won't get it till the end. When I saw the check, I was floored. But it wasn't about that. It was just that I took people and spent 12 weeks with them, an hour and a half every Tuesday in this church, some universalist church, and I taught them comedy. And they were good. And out of the 15 people that took my class, most of them came every week, but a lot of them bowed out on doing it when we had a show on week 13. And wouldn't you know it, 8 out of 15 did it. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, the show is not going to last long because 8 people times 3 or 4 minutes each. The show went for almost 2 hours because they had the greatest time in the world, and they're telling me jokes afterwards, and we had 2 shows after that down the road, and they were all, you know, a couple of them, 3 of them were a part of it the next night, 5 of them were a part of it the next time. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, not only did I impact them, but they impacted me. I felt so grateful that I had that experience. And it wasn't about any publicity that came out of it. It wasn't about the money. It's just that knowing that they'd come up to me and tell me jokes, or they'd write to me and email me, or they'd say, when are you going to be playing in, near our town? I'd tell them, and they'd show up. And it was like the greatest thing, feeling that love and the appreciation. Again, I'm saying, thank you, God. I mean, I couldn't have asked for like a better gift.
Yes. How amazing is that to watch people, start doing what you're doing, inspire them? Because I think, in the entertainment business, acting, comedy, it's tough. It's competitive. And I think so many people get discouraged. But to be able to encourage people and say, come on, do it, try, and then teaching them the tools, I mean, that's amazing. Oh. What type of things did you teach them? What are some tricks of the trade?
I just tell them when I teach young aspiring comedians, which, by the way, there are old aspiring comedians as well, I found out. I just tell them, be yourself, and most of all, if it's stories about you, think of it this way. Some people go through the same thing, and they'll find that, I had that experience too, but the way you tell it, and I tell them, when you put emotion into what you're talking about, that's what makes it funny, whether you do a voice imitating your aunt, your uncle, your grandparents, your kids. Then you tell them the story, here's another name, it's not that popular, but kind of like Bill Cosby in the old days. He'd tell a story, he'd paint a picture, he'd do the characters, he'd put emotion into it, and it was funny. And so I tell them, be yourself, be happy, and put emotion into it and sell it, and people will buy it. And then half the audience is going to be like, hey, that happened to me too. Or I remember when I was a kid, that's how my family was. Hey, that happened to me too. And it keeps going and going, and then they're with you, and they're laughing because it's just a funny experience. Like, oh, my God, I never thought of it that way.
Yes, yes. Years ago, before I became a therapist, I was a facilitator, caseworker, and I would take about 20 to 25 chronically mentally ill clients out on different trips, teaching them how to, eat in a restaurant. We actually went to a comedy show. We would, go to the movies. We'd go to a different public just to get them used to being out in society and everything. And we would used to have the best time. I mean, they had the best jokes, and we would just laugh. We would sit and laugh, and I think sometimes the funniest things are we would laugh at each other, and not like a bad laugh. Like, they would laugh at me sometimes because I would say something, and they'd be like, oh, Miss Alexa, are you having a blonde moment? And it would just be so hysterical, because I remember they were going to see the fireworks, and they were going into the city, and I was concerned, because it gets busy, and it's late, and I was nervous about them going to the city. I said, well, why don't you just go during the day and go a little bit earlier? And they go, Miss Alexa, you can't see the fireworks during the day. They're only at night. And I was like, oh, that's a good one. I didn't think of that. And they're like, blonde moment. I'm like, that's a blonde moment. I didn't think of that. And it's just, it's incredible. It's just genuine laughter and fun.
Well, yeah, that's like when I had brain injury patients and they start telling me jokes, or they say, because they know that I'm Italian, I'm 100% Italian, and they said, don't be so Italian, and like I'd say, don't be so Italian, and I'd laugh, I go, oh my God, they're throwing jokes at me, but it was just so cool just to hear them talk like that, or they try to do my impressions, like I tell them, like they say, don't be so Italian, I go, you can't say that to the Godfather, okay? I'll give you an offer. You can't refuse. And they'd laugh, and they'd start doing it back, and I'm like, oh, my God, what have I created here, But I'm happy at what I helped get out of them. And the facilitator for the group, who, by the way, was also brain injured, just said, this is amazing. She goes, I would never picture it. I knew they'd like it, but I'm thinking, how many are you going to do this? How many are going to tell jokes? And every week they come up to me and tell me jokes. And it was so cool. It was so rewarding. I'd say, don't be funnier than me, whatever you do, because you put me out of business. But it was neat. It was such a great gift.
Wow. So when you do your shows, what is usually your material? Do you have a set base of material, or does it change each show?
It's set material. The only time that it ever changes if I go in a crowd and do crowd work. Like if I know that the people, like if it's been a show where I headline and I'm the last act, and I look at the people working hard as comedians doing stuff and they're trying to do their material, and I think it's funny and the crowd's not digging it, then I may dig into crowd work and I ask people, hey, what's your name? How you doing? What do you do for work? We had one company where I'd ask the first few people, what are you? I'm an engineer. And I'm like, okay. And by the time I got to the 15th person, I go, don't tell me you're an engineer. And they'd laugh at that. They think it's funny because they think they're getting the best out of me. But, you know, so I'll deviate with some crowd work. But the bulk of the time, I just start off with making fun of myself as being Italian and talking about my mother, which, God forbid I say anything bad about her, but you know, she's not on the radio, so she probably doesn't get the channel. She's probably not even on the computer for all I care. But you know, so I poke fun at different stories about her, and people think it's comical. They go, "Did you write that?" I go, "No, it's all true." I go, "I have to admit it." I go, "How can I make fun of that?" Like I always talk about being a mama's boy and how, when I tried to move out when I was 19, my mother was crying in her Italian accent. She goes, "No, Jenny, please don't go." I said, "Ma, I got a good job. I got a car. I'm going to night school. I got a nice apartment." She goes, no, go. I broke. I saw I'd do anything for you. I said, "Ma, I'm moving upstairs." It's just comical because people think you're moving out of town, but that's how Italian mothers treat you. So I try to get deep into that. I even poke fun at my kids in like a nice way. I always feel that you don't have to be derogatory to be funny neither. So I talk about my lovely wife, been married like 33 years this November. God bless her, she's a saint. But I mean, I talk about how I was never romantic, and so she took me to see Love Story when we first dated, and it was so cool, it was nice, it was romantic, and then she goes, "It's your turn to pick a romantic movie." And I look at the crowd and say, "Folks, I'm Italian, and I'm a guy. When I picked to Dances with Wolves," I said, "that night I was known as Sleeps on Couch." So, it's just to be able to talk about that without being degrading, it's always so cool. You can degrade yourself, and I do that, because I talk about I was born with a lazy eye, and I remember gathering my friends and family when I was like a wee 9 years old, and I told my friends and family, I go, "Look, accept me for what I am. God made me this way. I want no doctor, no surgery, no medication. Live with me and stick by me with my lazy eye." And my family will look at me and say, "Jerry, we're right behind you. And by the way, we're over here." And I point to a different opposite direction. But then I tell people, when I met my wife, I told her, "Honey, I love you. I want to marry you. But will you live with this?" And I point at my eye. She goes, "What do you mean live with that?" I go, "Well, if you accept me for my lazy eye, I'm not going to get it fixed, no surgery, no nothing. God made me this way." She goes, "Of course I accept you." I said, "Well, apparently tonight, before I came to the show, she forgot about my lazy eye. I hugged her. I kissed her goodbye and told her I loved her. She thinks I'm seeing someone on the side." So it's so cool to make fun of that, And sometimes the audience goes like, "Oh," I go, "Don't go, oh, it's me making fun of me. You don't have to feel bad for me." And then if they laugh at me, I say, "Oh, my God, you guys suck. You're laughing at my disability." But it's just so humorous. And that self-deprecation is king. It helps make people laugh.
Yes. And you have to laugh at yourself. We all have to laugh at ourselves. We're not perfect. We do things silly. We do ridiculous things sometimes. And I think everybody does.
I thought
you
were perfect. Oh,
I burst the bubble.
I'm kidding. No, but it's true.
I ruined the bubble.
There goes the friendship. No, I'm just kidding. But no, because it's so true. Because if you laugh at yourself, you can accept anything. I'm not saying you can accept bad news, but, you build that shield, which makes you a stronger person. And to me, I'm not saying that it's great to be born with a lazy eye, but it's like, you know what? I get to see, I'm not saying how people really are, but I try to tell people, then if they say something, and say, like, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were looking at the person behind me. Go, "You're the only one working here. Who the heck am I looking at?" And then they laugh. They go, "I'm sorry." I go, "No, you can laugh. I don't care, So I try to make them feel at ease. Like, I make fun of myself, so it's okay. I'm not telling you to make fun of me, but, I'm saying, like, don't worry about it. Don't look at it differently,
Yes, yes. How long are your shows? Do you are you usually up for 40 minutes, an hour? How long do you usually stay on stage?
Yeah, about 45 minutes to an hour. There has been times that I've toured to the audience for 65 or 68 or 70 minutes, but I could talk forever. Look, I'm Italian. If you don't tie my hands, I can talk. If you tie my hands, I'm like a mute, you know? Like, I can't even talk, you know? But, yeah, it's the average is 45, but it leans more toward an hour. And I always feel bad. I'll ask the audience, you had enough? They go, no, keep going. I go, good thing you all are related to me, you know? I'm like, but no, and then not. But they think it's great. And I think people think that you're giving them free time, which, you know, me, look at it this way. And you could look at it this way, too. Whenever you write, whenever you talk, whenever you do your radio show, whatever you do to help people out, like when you took off mentally challenged people, you know, and you realize this, it's true, it's therapeutic for you as well. So when I'm telling
you, yes.
It's so therapeutic. You know, you can't, like if someone offered me $100,000 or I had to do a show which made me feel good, okay, I take the $100,000 first, then I did the show. No. But I mean, it would still make me feel good. I'd rather have the laughter, like I did, and I know you follow me at times. I did some, you know, houses for cancer patients called the Hope Lodge, and they're all over the place, all over the country. It's an honor to be there, but to see cancer patients, what they're going through, laughing, that's therapeutic for me too, because I could say like, to myself, oh, I have arthritis in my knee. And then I say to myself, shut up. Look at these people going through chemotherapy and all this treatment and, you know, and you're crying about your little knee ache. And then I walk away feeling so good about it. And then look up to the heavens and say, thank you, God, you know, I needed this.
Yes. It puts life in perspective. It really does. And I think it's so amazing to be able to sit with people and work with them and hear their story and speak with them. And people always laugh because, I mean, you think if I have a radio show, a television show, I'm a psychotherapist and I do acting, I'm a very shy person. And I know everyone always like, no, I'm a really shy person. Like if someone comes up to me and starts talking to me, I get shy really at first. But if once you get to know me, forget it. I could talk on for years. That's I have the gift of gab, but I'm also a shy person. And people are like, you can't be. I'm like, I am.
My God. You know, like I try to tell people that I said, I'm shy. They go, when are you shy? I go, probably at birth was probably the only time. And then after I, you know, started talking, you couldn't shut me up. But, yeah, I mean, but there are times that I'll go into places like a while back and I wouldn't clam up. I'd sit and listen because I'm always told by people, you got to listen to people too. I go, yeah. But I always think it's my job to make people laugh, and tell them a joke and loosen up the atmosphere. But, you know, so I'm just, I'm the direct opposite. Just put me anywhere, and I'll start performing, not on purpose, not to be obnoxious, but just to try to brighten people's days, because I think people really need it badly.
Oh, yes, yes. I think people, they need to laugh, they need to hear things, and they also need to learn. I find that people really want to learn. It's really important for people now, you know, to enjoy themselves. I think it's important for that, but also to learn and, you know, all this other stuff and drama that always goes on television. I think everything is really taking a turn for really people helping other people and being able to give it back. And it's really what's important in life.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, because if you turn on the local news, all you hear is, like, bad stuff, what's going on. And I know that's what they think sells, but I like every once in a while they go, we have a very nice story now. And they tell you that with like 10 seconds left. Thank God. Put it in the beginning because it's all good and makes us all feel better hearing that there's more good going on in the world than anything else.
Yeah. And there is a lot of good going on. I think people really, really need to know that. I think by the work that you're doing too, is you're showing people that there's a lot of good going on. There's a lot of good things. There's hope. There's laughter. And I think that's what people really need to focus on. The negative will always be there. You can always go back to it if you want to. But I think I always tell people, you know, you don't have to be criticized. You don't have to be around negative people. You don't have to be strong because you have to take criticism. No, that's baloney. You don't need to be around negative. You don't, you know, I'm not being a Pollyanna, but you have to still, you don't have to, you surround yourself with positive, like-minded, healthy, happy people, and that's the way to be a better person.
Absolutely, and they're more than that, you know, more than just a few people out there like that. It's just a matter of, like, say, surrounding yourself around positive people. And I love what my lovely wife says. She always says, this is why God keeps the world going, because whenever you hear a tragedy, everybody's always saying, oh, my God, this is not a great sign. You know, God's mad. It's like, no. But then you see and hear of all the good things, like stuff that you do and like others do. And, you know, God looks at that and says, like, you know, it's not so bad. There are more people good. And look at the people that raise money. And I'm not just talking people that work for directly for the organizations themselves. It's just the people that work, you know, to help people, you know, like that have been in a house fire, or people have a child that's sick, or a parent that's fighting a disease, and people come in their causes. And I look at it this way. I know two of my very close friends that lost their daughter to cancer, and she was 28, just had a baby, and, you know, 6 to 8 months later, she had stage 4 lymphoma. It was very sad. She was a beautiful girl. But what they do in her memory is they have an organization named after her, and they help people going through the same thing. And they donate money, and they donated to my friend that was battling cancer, which was a lovely thing. And, you know, they gave her, you know, it could have been $1,000 or $2,000. And the girl was in tears, like, I can't believe that thing. I go, well, believe it. There are more good out there. And like my wife said, God let the world keep going, because he sees all the good that we have to give.
Yes. Yes. Just paying it forward and keep moving it forward. So what's next in your career? What's next on your agenda?
Immediate or long term?
Both.
I'd love to do motivational speaking at a full-time basis, or just, you know, go around hither and thither and do it. I love doing hospitals and talking to hospital staff, and I've done that a couple of times. Again, they see a comedian in there, they're like, oh, here comes a nightclub act. But I'd love to do that, and I love to concentrate on, you know, support groups and doing more motivational speaking and just reaching out to them and trying to help them, because, you know, I know they need a laugh, and I know they need to feel good, and I know that, you know, God puts me out there to help them. Like, they want me possibly to go to Hope Lodge in Vermont, but I told them, like, look, I'd like to have some money to travel up there, and I know they put me up for nothing, but just to travel up there, because it would be a 3.5-hour ride. But I'd look forward to that, because I'd be touching people from Vermont, New Hampshire, and even New York, because, you know, Hope Lodge only has so many locations. But just to see and experience that, you know, so I'd love to do that. I love to continue comedy, and I just love, you know, too bad. And tell me you don't think the same thing. Did you see the movie Patch Adams?
No, I didn't.
Try to see it. It's the one that Robin Williams made a great film, and it's like a story about a guy who was in a hospital doctor who used humor, you know, to make people laugh. And I always said to my wife, I go, hey, at the hospital you work at, are they looking for any Patch Adams type people? She goes, no, Jerry, they don't look for that. I said, you know, just to go around and try to make patients' days, or just go talk to different groups of patients, you know, like you look at like a children's hospital or like, you know, like a rehab clinic full of elderly people, just to brighten their day. I'd love to do something like that, but, you know, I mean, those are far and few. That's like a gift. If someone knows you, say, oh, you want to come to the hospital to make people laugh? Okay. Can you come Monday, Wednesday, and Friday? I'd be like, yep, I'm there. You know, I'd love to do that, but that's like an impossible position. That's like a dream position. But, and then in the
that
meantime,
would be amazing.
Oh, that'd be, you know, so rewarding, and just to make people's day. Like, I hats off to these athletes that go to hospitals and cancer clinics to go make days for children or people fighting that dreaded disease and making them feel good. Because, you know, my friend passed away from his name is Bob Seibel, and he's a great comedian. He was in his early 70s, and he lost his battle to brain cancer. But he used to tell me before he even got this, he said, Caruso, that's what he called me. He didn't like calling me Jay. He goes, you know, me and you could do a show for 90 minutes. He goes, if we'll split the time, we do 45 minutes each. Guess what? He goes, we're not going to cure cancer, but we're sure as hell going to put it in remission for that 90 minutes or 90 minutes plus. And it's so true. I take those words with me every day. You know, I look at the crowd, and I may not be doing a benefit, but I know that even at a comedy show, there's nothing, somebody did, had, having a bad day or not having good things, you know, go on in their life and looking for an outlet just to, you know, possibly laugh and bring a smile to their face. If I could do that, oh, that's a big reward right there.
I think we have a caller. Hold on 1 second.
Oh, my goodness.
Hello and welcome. You're on the air on Insight into Healing.
Hello.
Are you there? Hi, how
Hi,
are
how
you?
You doing?
Welcome.
I was just listening in, and that was good what you're doing, man. That's a very positive thing, you know, making people laugh. That's a, it's like medicine and all that. So keep doing what you're doing. God bless you and all that.
Yeah, thank
Great.
You. Same to you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, I'm one of your Facebook friends. I've seen your post on Facebook. Let me check it out real quick.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. It's so good to have you. Thank you.
Yes,
well, we have a couple of minutes left, too, but thank you for calling in.
Thanks,
yes,
Frank. Have a great one.
Yes.
Oh, that was nice.
Oh, that's nice. Yes. And I'm still learning, too. I mean, I've been doing this for 2 years, but I also do some of the engineering on my radio show, so sometimes people will call up. And I'm like, are they calling in to speak to the show, or are they just calling in to listen? And sometimes I shock them, and I go, hello, you're on the air. They're like, I'm still trying to figure that. You know, you have to laugh at yourself. I'm not everything. Sometimes these things happen, you know. So sometimes I get people on. Sometimes I disconnect people. I try to do my best. I'm not perfect.
Yeah, well, like, I was shocked. Somebody wants to die? Oh, that's great. No, but that's good. It's like, say, it's like we said at the beginning, if it touches one person, then we did our job, you know, because it's going to get out there more, you know, or someone's going to say, oh, you should listen to that. Is this repeated, too?
This show will be archived on blogtalkradio.com/AlexaS29. I will put it all over Facebook. I will also send it to you. All my shows are archived, so if people miss it, they can listen to it. They can go back, download it for free. They can listen to it as many times they want to and all of that. Sometimes you have to sign up for a free Blog Talk account as a listener. Make sure you sign up as a listener. And it's free, and you get to listen to all the different shows, and it's all my shows are archived.
Awesome. That's great stuff.
Yeah, I love it. I love doing radio. I think it's just so amazing. It's been more than 2 years that I've been on the air, and the people that I meet, and it's just amazing. My book is based on a lot of my guests that I've had on, and it's just they've made a difference in my life. They've made a difference in my listeners' lives and my guests' lives. It just keeps, you know, the network keeps building and building, and the community keeps growing, and I think that's what it's all about.
Oh, God bless you. That's great to hear. Oh, wonderful. I love hearing that.
Yes. Thank you. So how can people follow you? Do you have a website or a link where people can follow you or come see you and know when your shows are?
Yeah, there's, you know, I have the most longest website address in God's creation. It's like, you know, people say, can't you shorten it? I go, no. I guess there's too many Jerry Crusoes out there. It's like www.jerrygcarusocomic.webs.com. And that's my website. It has a calendar, a sign-in area, and pictures. It has a couple of YouTubes. And, you know, people can follow me that way. And I'm also on Facebook. I'm one of those guys. But, you know, I meet some of the nicest people on Facebook, and I help them out. Or, you know, and little do they know, like I said, they're helping me out, too, therapeutically, you know. Get through some tough days. Yes, I have beautiful grandchildren that help me. They're beautiful, and that's good too. But you know, if I could show my skills and make people laugh, that's all good. I can't complain. So that's the best way. So.
And we were talking about,
you
know, you have to come to New York and do some shows, and I have to come up by you and do your show up there, and we have to do some. We got a lot of incredible work ahead of us.
Yes, that's so true. Yeah. Like I said, you know, like I tell people, that one girl from Long Island wanted me. She's thinking of me doing something for her veterans group that she has, And, you know, it didn't pan out, but I still stay in touch because I'd come down. And she says, how much do you charge? I said, just pay my expenses. I don't care because it's like just to get me down there and, you know, and I have fun. And if I'm helping a great cause and lots of money is raised, and that's awesome, you know. So, you know, I always pass it on to different people. But I love coming. I love New York and New Jersey. Go figure. You know, it's probably that Italianness. Probably all those Italians down there, you know. So.
Yes, I'm half Italian, so I'm half Italian, Swedish, and Finnish. So, but of course, you know, the servo di Dio, as my dad would say. I say servo di Dio, but yep, long Italian last name.
Ah, very good. That's why we connected. Well, thank you. So
I also know it means, as I know, it means servant of God.
Oh, that's very cool. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah,
Mine means,
I love it.
Caruso translated as loudmouth Italian, so, you know, so I guess I live by that, you know.
Well, Jerry, we're at the end of the show. Again, I wanted to thank you so much for being on. It's been such an incredible show.
Thank you. I loved it. It was a blast, and I loved getting that one call, so I got my first caller from New York. So that's very cool.
It's very, very exciting, and I love it. We're having a great time, and again, I want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight. If you have any questions, please feel free to send them to me at insightintohealing@gmail.com. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. You can send any questions or show topics or ideas. All names will remain confidential, and also please check out my new book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos. It is also on Facebook at facebook.com/findingyourpeacewithinthechaos and also at www.ccbpublishing.com/aservodidio.html. Another long address, I'm sorry. But everyone, it's one of those long. I don't know how to shorten it. It's just how it is. But again, everyone, thank you for tuning in. Have a good night. And God bless.
Thank you, and God bless everyone is right.